providing safe, efficient, compliant high hazard nuclear facility operations, facility decommissioning and demolition, safeguard security, emergency management, and environment safety and quality assurance.
Aye, aye.
There you go. It's all you.
Thank you for that introduction, Nancy. I was looking around to see who you were talking about. So, in the earlier sessions today, I don't think there has been a session at all that didn't talk about PIP production. So we recognize that this is the last session of the afternoon. We are all that are standing between you and the reception. But I recognize too that PIP production is on the mind of everyone. We heard that PIP production is a big deal. We heard the administrator mention that we're facing a strong headwind in meeting our objectives for PIP production. The 2018 Nuclear Posture Review stated there now is no margin for further delay in recapitalizing the physical infrastructure needed to produce strategic materials and components for U.S. nuclear weapons. And in the 2022 NPR, it was a commitment to deliver a modern, adaptive nuclear security enterprise based on an integrated strategy for risk management, production-based resilience, science and technology innovation, and workforce initiatives. And you've heard a lot about that today. So with that, I'd like to introduce our distinguished panel that are here and central to the PIP production mission. And I'd like to start with Dr. Marvin Adams. Who is the NNSA's Deputy Administrator for Defense Programs, a position that he's been in since April of 2022, when he was confirmed by the Senate and sworn into office by Secretary Granholm. He leads the team responsible for maintaining the safety of the and security and reliability of the nation's nuclear weapons stockpile. The team that designs, manufactures, assesses, surveils, transports, dismantles, and manufactures U.S. nuclear warheads, and it also manages the materials and physical infrastructure that these activities require, and it develops and maintains the unique capabilities needed for the missions now and into the future. Dr. Adams served as DOE as a physicist at the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. From then until his confirmation as deputy administrator, he was a professor of nuclear engineering at Texas A&M, while also serving the U.S. national security in a wide variety of roles. He served on the President's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology, the Stockpile Assessment Team of the Strategic Advisory Group for the U.S. Strategic Command, the National Academic Committee on International Security and Arms Control, the Predictive Science Panel for LLNL and Los Alamos National Laboratory, the Mission Committee for LANL and Predictive Engineering Sciences Panel at Sandia National Laboratories, and many other review and advisory bodies related to national security. He earned his PhD and MS degrees in nuclear engineering from the University of Michigan, a fellow Michigan alum, Go Blue, and his BS degree in nuclear engineering from Mississippi State University. Our second panelist with us today is Mark Davis. Mark serves as, I've lost your bio here, Mark.
Just make it out.
But it was so impressive.
I don't know this guy. They've hired some
many people, I don't know him.
Okay, there it is. Mark assumed his current position as the Associate Laboratory Director of Weapons Production, Chief Operating Officer at the Los Alamos National Laboratory in April of 2022. In this role, he's responsible for continuing to build operational discipline, consistency, and effectiveness across all operations and facilities. He joined the laboratory after serving as a Senior Vice President of NNSA Operations and Programs at the Savannah River site with Savannah River Nuclear Solutions. In that role, he was responsible for tritium operations and programs, as well as nuclear nonproliferation programs. He brings almost 40 years of experience in nuclear operations, including a 36-year career in the U.S. Navy prior to his retirement as a captain in 2017. And then our third distinguished panelist is Stuart McBean. Stuart is the President and Chief Executive Officer for Savannah River Nuclear Solutions. He is responsible to the Department of Energy for safe and effective and efficient management of operations of the Savannah River site M&O contract. SRS is one of DOE's largest production sites, performing activities ranging from environmental cleanup and protection to nuclear material storage and disposition, including operation of the only U.S. tritium plant and design and construction of three NNSA capital projects, including the Savannah River Plutonium Processing Facility. His responsibilities include providing vision, leadership, mission growth, technological advancement, and a performance-based culture of safety, security, and operational excellence at the site. These are the three gentlemen that are engaged in the support of the objective for the NNSA for PIT production. And with that, since I know there are a lot of questions, based on the discussions we've had earlier, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Adams to make his comments.
Thank you, Cheryl, and thank you to the conference organizers for inviting me and for holding this event, which is a service to the community and thus to the whole enterprise. As 30 years as a professor, I've kind of learned how to read a room, and I sense that people are tired of talking about pit production. And I know that Mark and Stuart are going to talk about it, so I'm going to talk about tritium. Is that okay? Just kidding. So I'm going to start with some general background. And I'm really going to start with the basics. So an important component in U.S. nuclear warheads is the pit, which contains plutonium. During the Cold War at Rocky Flats, we were able to manufacture 1,000 a year of these things, and sometimes more. But that plant stopped manufacturing pits in 1989, a long time ago. Now, the NNSA is developing capability to manufacture plutonium pits at the rate of at least 80 war reserve pits per year. I often hear the question of why we're doing this now, given the common perception that pits last for a long time. I'd like to address that first. Good. So first of all, we have never had pits as old as today's pits will be before they come out of the stockpile. Nobody's ever seen a 90-year-old pit, for example, or an 80-year-old pit, or a 70-year-old pit. So when we estimate how long they will last, these are extrapolatory estimates that have uncertainty. How long a pit will meet requirements, second point, depends on the system. It is certainly true that the performance of a pit will degrade over time. How quickly it is tough to calculate and prove and bound. But some systems are more tolerant of that degradation than others. So if somebody just gives you a blanket statement like pits last 100 years, you can probably, well, at least say they're oversimplifying the truth. You might question, whether they know all that much about what they're talking about. The complex nature of pit aging phenomena, along with the extreme dynamic conditions in the nuclear weapon as it explodes, means that our uncertainties in pit aging behavior, in the performance of aged pits, those uncertainties are likely to be diminished slowly over time. Let me follow that with the remark you've been hearing, like in the previous panel. Our development of nuclear capabilities at a large scale takes a long time. So if we're going to need it, say in a decade or two, we'd better get started. Finally, as delivery systems change in response to changing conditions in the world, warhead requirements change. And putting old pits into new warheads might very well be a highly suboptimal solution. One of NNSA's jobs is to be prepared for a variety of possible futures. We can't see what the world's gonna be like in 20 years. But one could argue that a nuclear weapon state should be able to manufacture all the components of a nuclear warhead. And I do share that opinion. So with that as background and why we're doing what we're doing, I'll also remind the audience that in 2018, after an analysis of alternatives, the decision was made to go for a two-site solution for pit production. With this solution, we intend to achieve rates of at least 30 pits per year, war reserve pits per year coming out of Los Alamos, or at least the capability to have that many coming out of Los Alamos, and at least 50 per year at Savannah River. The Los Alamos capability is being developed in an operating facility that has made pits before, including war reserve pits 10, 12 years ago. It's PF4. It is making development pits today. The Savannah River capability, in contrast, is being developed to mostly reside in a facility in a building that was constructed for a different purpose and does not have operations going on today. As you will hear from Mark and Stuart, the challenges they face are different, and they both face challenges that would be different from the challenges that you'd face with a greenfield solution. I want you to remember three things about what it takes to have reliable rate production. There's more to it than this, but these are three big ones that I want you to remember. So first, you need a pit design that is manufacturable, sufficiently manufacturable, that a lot of the ones you build can be stamped war reserve. Number two, you need manufacturing processes of sufficient maturity that when you build a bunch of these things, you do yield a lot of war reserve pits. So a high fraction you do produce will be war reserve pits. And then number three, you need sufficient equipment and the people to run the equipment that you can support the needed number of pit builds when you take into account facility downtime, scheduled downtime, interruptions, equipment failures, and build failures. You're not going to yield 100%. Okay, so keep those three things in mind as we go forward. Our enterprise is working to reach full rate production as soon as possible. It's abundantly clear that we will not reach 80 pits per year, or reserve pits per year, by 2030, which was the original target date, and it does appear in legislation. Today's predictions of how many war reserve pits we will produce each year for the next 10 or 15 years, those predictions have large uncertainties. And I've been saying that to everyone since I was sworn in 10 months ago. So we're not going to pretend that we know year by year exactly how many war reserve pits will come out of Los Alamos and how many will come out of Savannah River. With that information, that uncertainty, you might have heard Deb Rosenblum earlier today, we've been completely transparent with our DoD partners about this, and we have worked closely and continuously with them to account for these uncertainties. They have uncertainties too in some of their delivery platforms. So we're working together to plan in the face of those uncertainties, and we will ensure, in spite of these uncertainties, that our nuclear deterrent will remain effective into the future. So that's general. I'm going to say a few words about Los Alamos, then a few words about Savannah River, and then I'll turn over the stage. The first pit to be manufactured at Los Alamos is for the W87-1 warhead, which is slated to sit atop the Sentinel ICBM that is under development. Lawrence Livermore Lab is responsible for the pit design. Kansas City is responsible for manufacturing the non-plutonium components. And Los Alamos makes the plutonium parts, takes the parts from Kansas City, and assembles the pit. The design of the W87-1, remember we need a manufacturable design, right? It's the first thing I said of the three things we need. Based on experience with development builds at Los Alamos, the combined team of NNSA, Los Alamos, Livermore, and Kansas City decided last fall on a design change for the W87-1 pit. We switched designs. This change will delay the first unit that will be stamped as a War Reserve pit. That is, this decision we made will delay FPU. We did that with our eyes open. It delays FPU, but it gets us more quickly to more War Reserve pits on the time scale that matters. That first production unit, I expect, will come out in the second half of 2024. I think Mark will cover more about process maturation at Los Alamos. So remember, manufacturable designs, sufficiently mature processes. Talk a little bit about equipment now. Equipment is being designed, manufactured, procured, and installed at Los Alamos PF4 under several different projects, the largest of which is the Los Alamos Plutonium Pit Production Project, with those four P's in a row, it's LAP4. And that project itself has several sub-projects, and they all have overlapping time scales, and they have to be integrated in their integration. I think Mark will cover that throughout all of this equipment installation that's going on at Los Alamos, they will continue to build pits. This is not a typical construction project, in other words. Okay, we're going to be building pits all along. As equipment is installed, it will be turned over and used. So please don't misunderstand that the completion date of all the equipment installation is when pit building starts. That's not the case. More than 35 have been built to date, and building will go on. At this time, it appears that equipment installation will not happen quickly enough to support 30 War Reserve pits per year by the year 2026. But efforts are underway to improve the installation schedules, partly at least, by clever scheduling of production work to allow equipment work to occur more of the time in certain areas of the building. Okay, what about impacts on the stockpile? I just said I don't think we're gonna make 30 per year by 2026. Impacts on the stockpile. Again, we continue to communicate very closely with our DoD partners, and they are working very well with us to accommodate our uncertainties in these schedules, uncertainties and delays in our schedules. Our deterrent will remain safe, secure, reliable. The warheads will remain safe, secure, reliable. The deterrent will remain effective. Turning to Savannah River, a different situation there. Design efforts are underway for the process equipment, the glove boxes that will contain the process equipment, and the many, many systems that connect to the glove boxes and to the outside world in that facility. This is in the main process building. There are also many supporting facilities outside the main processing building, which are also being designed. Removal of old material and equipment from the main process building is starting soon, or maybe has started. Has started, good. Site preparation and construction of supporting facilities can and will get underway before equipment installation gets underway in that main process building. As you've heard, construction projects across the U.S. are suffering from supply chain delays, labor shortages, and disappointing productivity, inflation as well. And our projects are no exception. And the ones that, when I say our projects are no exception, that includes not only your standard construction projects, but also these projects that involve procuring equipment and installing it into existing buildings. We are working to mitigate the cost and schedule impacts of those realities. For example, by approving early procurement contracts for materials and equipment, and by flattening out our labor demands as much as possible. We're responding dynamically as realities become apparent in cost and schedule space. The Savannah River project is a good example of using lessons from other projects, for example, to really put our money on long lead procurement items, and Stuart will probably talk about that. There was a question earlier about doubling our production capacity in the face of geopolitical uncertainties. That's easy to say and not easy to do, but I will say that the administrator and I are committed to looking for solutions that do give us flexibility to ramp up or ramp down in the production capacity that we are striving to build right now. I'll just leave that at that.
It is truly my pleasure to be on this panel today talking about what I believe is the most exigent mission in the NNSA portfolio. And it is entirely appropriate to be sharing this stage with Stuart, because for the Pitt production mission to be successful, LANL and SRPPF must work in concert. To that end, we are collaborating on several fronts to include knowledge sharing, technology solutions, and benchmarking of processes. While much is to be learned from this collaborative effort, it should be recognized that our challenges are far different. Stuart will talk about SRPPF and their mission to repurpose a partially complete facility while building a production capacity from the ground up. At LANL, the best analogy I can come up with is that we are overhauling and upgrading a plane during flight with a load of passengers on board. We are increasing our production efforts and evolving our production agency while simultaneously executing three significant capital projects, including the Los Alamos Plutonium Pit Production Project, or LAP-4, the TA-55 Reinvestment Project, or TRP-3, and the Chemistry and Metallurgy Research Replacement Project, or CMRR, not to mention numerous other small projects and major items of equipment installation. The three capital projects alone represent $8 billion in infrastructure improvements. Now, as Marv said, decontamination and removal of old equipment is ongoing at PF4, clearing space for the new equipment that is to be designed, manufactured, and installed. Decontamination, removal, and installation usually occur during second and third shifts in the same rooms where pit production and other work occurs during the day. We will continue to build pits at PF4 throughout the equipment removal and installation. Capacity and resilience will grow steadily over time as each piece of equipment is installed and turned over to operations. So there are no step functions at the end of the big equipment projects and sub-projects. Like with any program of this complexity and magnitude, there have been challenges. However, tremendous progress has been made toward understanding and resolving complex failure modes encountered during production development. Manufacturing processes continue to be exercised and matured at both LANL and Kansas City. To date, more than 35 development pits have been built. The build rate is increasing. Build failure mechanisms are increasingly well understood, and build quality is increasing. These collaborative efforts have put the pit development effort in a strong position to achieve the first production unit and reduce risk to rate production. We expect the first war reserve pit or first production unit in 2024, and we expect an increasing number of war reserve pits to be produced each subsequent year. Exact production rates will depend on a few things. First, how quickly processes mature so a high percentage of build attempts yield war reserve pits. Second, the number and types of facility and equipment failures that occur over time. And third, the rate at which the new equipment is installed. As with other lab plants and sites, and more generally with practically every major corporation, we have been faced with the changing dynamics of the workforce. We are trying to grow the workforce to accomplish the mission while replacing significant numbers of retirees. Last year, the lab hired over 2,000 employees. In the past 5 years, the laboratory workforce has grown from approximately 11,000 employees to over 15,000. An additional expansion is planned. While this is a risk, it's also an opportunity. Presently, about 50% of our workforce has between 0 and 5 years of lab experience. This changing workforce provides new energy, new enthusiasm, a questioning attitude, and a fresh perspective. It also requires a focus on training, both initial and continuing, as well as knowledge transfer. The past few years have also presented challenges caused by the COVID pandemic, to include lost productivity from illness and the resulting supply chain disruptions and cost increases. To overcome these challenges while simultaneously executing the mission requires a fresh approach to the way we evolve our production agency. We placed a significant effort on production agency transformation because we recognize that people, plant, and processes necessary to produce 30 pits are far different than those required to produce one. We have added a new senior director to the organization to oversee this transformation. We are confident that these collective efforts will enable us to effectively mitigate the risk to rate production. And our efforts are bearing fruit. In FY22, we produced 7 development pits, the most in any year in recent history. Already in FY23, we have completed 5 builds ahead of our plan for the year. We also increased the facility availability for production from 19.5 weeks in FY21 to 30 weeks in FY22. I appreciate the opportunity to share the progress of our remarkable workforce on this vital national security mission. Our workforce is proud of our purpose, which is to deliver credible and sustainable strategic deterrence to the nation. Thank you.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Glad to see everybody here. It's always a good time to get up front and speak to the team that's delivering on plutonium modernization. Yes. Because the fact of the matter is, It's a full team sport. The whole team's out on the field, and a lot of you folks are involved in it. But I'll go back to start and say, Mark and I are at very different points in the life cycle of the products that we're trying to achieve. We're way at the beginning. They're a long way into it. Their success will bode well for us to be able to take what we're currently designing and turn it into a reality. Go back to the, what's the mission? 30 pits, at least 30 pits at Los Alamos, and at least 50 pits at Savannah River. And what I'm coming to understand is that every time I talk to the administrator or Marv, the L at the beginning of least gets bigger with more emphasis. Because every time I hear it, it's at least 50 pits at Savannah River. I think the challenge then is to be able to design and build a plant that has significant flexibility to not only achieve the original design specification, but to have lots of capability and opportunity. And that's exactly what we're designing today. We're designing a plant that has significant capability. It is designed today to run on a single shift basis. Our plants at Savannah River run on a 24/7 basis, so there's some added capability right there. And the design of the plant is built around flexibility, the ability to develop new warheads as the requirement becomes better known going into the future, as well as having significant amounts of white space, what we call white space within the facility design, which means empty rooms capable of being able to be turned into whatever that next generation requirement set could be coming from the Department of Defense to NNSA. So the way we're working right now is to design a highly flexible, agile, and capable machine that we'll be able to use well into the future. The current state of play there is we're about 2 years into the design effort. We're hitting 90%. We just received our first 90% design package for some of our early equipment. And we have quite a series of packages that'll be coming in for design reviews at the 90% level over the next few months. Significant to that is the viewpoint that we've taken with NNSA's support, which is we can't wait till it's all designed and done to move out on some of the long lead procurement. So these early design packages are glove boxes that'll allow us to get fabrication started much earlier than would be typical in a large scale project such as this. The reason we're confident about that is because it's not just the design packaging, but it's all or the design packaging of the glove boxes, but it's also the interior process lines, which are included in that design and are coming right straight from Los Alamos. So the partnership that we've got with Los Alamos, their designer of record, Merrick, and a balance of plant designer, Floor, that can really take the full packaging of what's going on out at Los Alamos and turn that into a different plant, but of the same type, so that we can start faster, is what is significant as we stand here today. We could be going off and trying to design to a different warhead, different pit type, but the truth of the matter is we need to get the plant up and running as quickly as possible. Marv talked about the 2030 timeline. You know, I continue to maintain that we're gonna build that plant as quickly as we can and bring it online as close to 2030 as possible. What many people don't realize is that there's a monster program behind it that is the capability to actually run that plant and turn it into something that can be utilized that's got a stamp on it. So we're also building up a significant plutonium capability from an operational standpoint to be able to move that program forward at a much earlier pace than we typically would. So we've got a team of people that are stood up and starting to build out the operational capability, understanding all the engineering requirements of the plant and how we will operate that plant. Spending a significant amount of time with folks from Los Alamos and Livermore to understand what will it take to go from a plant that's ready to operate to be able to produce a war reserve pit. It is a significant timeline which has proven to be shortened a little bit in the most recent LEPs, but will take considerable time and effort once the plant is constructed and ready to go. So that team right now has the target of proving out the plant and producing its first pit that can be stamped in about 50% of the current timeline that we've been seeing over the last decade. So pretty significant effort underway when you think about it from that perspective. Now that takes a lot of folks and a lot of time to be able to engage and understand exactly what are we talking about. We've got a lot of new folks wouldn't know a pit if they looked at it through a glove box glass. And so we're having a lot of education that's going on right now. But thanks to you all that are in the room, many of you are participating in reviews, will participate in reviews going into the future to help educate that workforce. So we've got teachers right here in the room that are coming down to Savannah River, coming along with our Los Alamos colleagues and teaching us what does it really mean to produce a pit, what's that look like, how are we going to incorporate that. We're looking at training sessions and capability and knowledge transfer. That's fairly significant. So we've got a team of folks down embedded at Los Alamos on a two-year assignment basis on a rolling wave to go into each unit operation, make sure they fully understand that, then come back and share that with the workforce at Savannah River. So there's a significant amount of effort ongoing to not only stand up the project and move it forward as crisply as possible, but also the program that will go along with it. First steps in the program will be a machining center that we don't currently have that has micro lathes in it and the capabilities that will be required at a later date, all commercially available and non-classified, so we can start the education program for our operators. That'll move into a classified training space at a later date. It's a project that we're currently finishing up design on, and we'll build out in one of our spare facilities that currently is being used for training and warehousing. We're going to move that facility in there. The idea is to bring operators, RadCon, maintenance folks online to monitor that mimic of the current full-scale production line using the exact same glove boxes, the exact same equipment that will be available to them in the plant, so they can train and qualify in a sister facility and then move over into the main processing building that Mark talked about. So significant effort underway. Now let me go back to the project for just a minute. So I just talked that we're getting our first 90% design packages, and I think we'll be seeing a rolling wave of those through the rest of this year. But along with those goes the start of construction. So we've actually got preparatory construction activities that have started in the plant. We've got six different subcontracts that we've let for various activities related to disassembling and removing equipment from the facility. There are 500 rooms in the building. We're working in 51 of those. After just a month, we have 10 of them already done with the equipment removed so that it is ready to have equipment reinstalled. We're starting to do other activities in the building, such as we're in a design build contract to install ventilation that will allow 24/7 completely temperature controlled construction activities in the building. That's unique and unusual. And for those of you who know South Carolina well, there's a little bit of heat and humidity during the summer that has to be dealt with. And you can keep people working longer if you can keep the temperatures down a little bit. So a very unusual approach to how can we extend our construction hours and get more time out of the folks that are in the building versus having to go to heat oasis and take time out of the workday. It'll make a significant difference in how fast we can build, as well as being able to expand into longer duration hours and weeks for our construction activities. We are looking at the critical path to build out the project, and it is mostly through the process building and making sure that we get these folks that are in early out of the way. We'll be able to start installation while we're still removing equipment because there are so many different floors and spaces to be able to work in. We're going to be able to get in there and start working simultaneously, but the bigger effort will be in the outside facilities. We've got a number of outside facilities that have shown that they are on the critical path just due to the size and scale and location of where we need to place some of the facilities and their accessibility while we're performing construction activities. So considerable amount of subcontracting getting ready to turn loose in that area. Like I said, we've got a half a dozen for inside the building. We've got another half a dozen getting ready to go out for outside the building. And one of the things that Ken Sheely and his team at Marv's request is moving out on let's go get those long lead procurements. Let's get the early construction preparation activities moving so that we have a critical path where, like Ken just said a minute ago, we're always under construction, always building. Get to the point where the paper is no longer the critical path, which on some large scale projects it has become at one point or another. And so with that, I'll probably stop there, Cheryl, and turn it back over to you because I know there's lots of questions we haven't answered yet. How's that sound? All right, thanks.
Office for Production Agency Transformation. What other improvements has LANL made related to operations and maturity, such as integrated scheduling and configuration management?
That's a great question. I appreciate that. One of my friends must have submitted that one. So we've done a great deal since I started in April. We identified four specific areas that we wanted to focus on. One is ConOps. Another is configuration management, another is predictive and preventive maintenance, and the last is an integrated schedule. And so we have groups set up in each of those areas to go off and get those things going, because really, you can't have effective ConOps unless you have all four of those things. You can have the greatest ConOps in the world, but if you don't have a schedule that's credible, and your workforce goes down to do the job, and you don't have the people and parts that you need, then your ConOps falls apart. If you don't understand the configuration of the facility, it's tough to have effective ConOps. So all of those things kind of have to go together. And so we're focusing in those four areas to bring about improvements.
Okay. So the next question is for you, Dr. Adams. An earlier question about the congressionally mandated 10-year plan to study Pitt lifetime, and the question is, when will that plan be delivered?
So my friend Kim Goodell said, hey, if you get a really hard question that you don't want to answer, just say, hey, did you hear about ignition? So did you hear about ignition? No, seriously. I believe by April 1st, we are scheduled to deliver a briefing to Congress. It's not a report, it's a briefing. That's the latest thing from the NDAA language, and we will give that briefing on our work on Pitt lifetimes to Congress, to congressional staffers on April 1st. As far as I know, there's not an unclassified report on Pitt aging that we can hand out.
So another question that came in for the audience, and this is for you, Mark, and for you, Stuart. How are LANL and SRS working together for current employees' training and knowledge transfer? And I think you spoke to that a little bit earlier.
Yeah, so one additional thing that I'll add. So we have started here last year with quarterly summit meetings to bring together groups from each of the sites to kind of discuss ways that we can collaborate. And so working on those things, like Stuart says, we have people out at LANL right now from SRPPF that are in the facility learning the operations. I have weekly calls with my counterpart at SRPPF to discuss ways that we can collaborate, transfer knowledge, identify people, you know, to put people in the best positions, whether they're at LANL or at SRPPF, to maximize the knowledge transfer and the learning curve.
Yeah, the thing I would add to that, Cheryl, is that I think we're up to, like 2.5 dozen workshops that we've held trying to make sure that we understand the similarities and differences between the facilities and make sure that we're sharing all that information. And we're probably running a couple of those a month. We've got people that are going out on Both the long-term assignments are going out for 2 years, but they're also going out for 2, 3, 4 weeks at a time. Maybe it's a specific need. So we have both knowledge transfer where we're embedding, but we have mutual support needs, and we're going back and forth. Mark had a team in to Savannah River just last week, looking specifically at maintenance. How do we do maintenance in a full-up operating facility? Because you do, it's a little bit different than in some other kinds of operations. So we've constantly got people going back and forth. I can't even count the number of benchmark visits we've done for the project. We've gone up to UPF to look at construction or look at the construction activities. We've been over AWE over in the UK. We've spent a lot of time interacting. So it's both the project interface and knowledge, making sure we understand the lessons learned. And we've gotten a lot, for instance, glove box fabrication off of UPS. But also then the program side and understand that knowledge transfer. Like I said, we're having classes about once a month at Savannah River where folks from in this room are providing lessons on, where the next group of people that need to grow and understand. So it's a fairly significant and robust program of work back and forth between the two sites.
So we have a number of questions that came in electronically, but I do want to offer an opportunity for anyone in the audience that has a live question, and it looks like this side of the room.
Don't give it to Dan.
Dan Leone with the Exchange Monitor. I've got 10 questions for Stuart. I've heard of fusion. I heard it even happened during a nuclear weapons experiment, which is funny because that's not what my family, who heard about it on the news, heard. Thank you all for being here so much. My question's for Dr. Adams. You mentioned the 87-1 pit design change. Did it change because, sorry for the rude question, because Livermore couldn't develop the design, or because the manufacturing capabilities that you envision having couldn't manufacture the design, or because the military's requirements changed, or for some other reason?
So let's see, without getting into too much detail, the design was always going to be a challenge, and the original design was there when there were still potential military requirements on the table that were later removed. So the removal of those military requirements kind of late in the game opened the door to simplify the design and make it more manufacturable.
Okay, thanks. Just one other. The 23 NDAA said that according to the independent project review for SRPPF, it would make at least 50 pits a year by 2036. So is that true? And if it's true, then does what the IPR says agree with the consensus reality we all presumably in this room share?
So was there zero uncertainty in that?
Well, I just mean, is the independent project review on the money? Is 50 pits a
the
year
way
SRPPF
you stated it,
going to
the
happen
way,
in
20 the way you stated it, it is not. But.
Sorry. I'll ask it in a simpler way. There's an independent project review, which these big projects all get, which is outside of the project. And that review said that SRPPF could make 50 pits a year in 2036. This was in the joint explanatory statement for the 23 NDAA.
I believe that's possible.
Okay.
Stuart, would you agree?
I agree.
I believe that's possible.
As you might imagine, there's lots of qualifiers with that.
Hi, thanks for being here, you guys. Greg Miller, Los Alamos Study Group. Can someone, this would be from Mark, provide the full scope of capital improvements needed to maintain the Los Alamos pit production mission over, let's say, the next 20 years, and that includes things that have to be started within the next 20 years. Campus Master Plan says that PF4 needs to be replaced or augmented within the 30-year planning horizon of the Campus Master Plan. to just mention one thing, and then radiography, Sigma building. It's hard to understand the full scope of the project, and so hard to understand the cost.
Yeah, so that's a, you could do a dissertation on that question. That's, there's a lot there. I would say the projects that we have, ignition, that's right. I would say that the projects we have underway right now are focused on reducing the risk to rate production. And so the LAP4 project that we talked about has a 30 base component, which is getting us halfway there, and then a 30 reliable component, which gets us the rest of the way there to a 90% reliability that we can produce those 30 pits per year. And so those projects with the other two I talked about, we're confident when we complete those that we can meet the requirements that are presently on the table. Now, 20 years down the road, that's for a different discussion.
Okay, so there's a question that came in anonymously, electronically, and I know that you have spoken to some of the issues with procurement and getting it out in front of long lead procurements. There's a follow-on question here that says, what challenges or successes do you see as far as budget execution in moving forward with the project activities and also the people and equipment development process for Los Alamos? Mark, we'll start there.
So I think that's what's unique about the time period now is I don't think the budget is really a challenge. I think we have the money that we need. It's just a question of executing now. And we talked about some of those challenges, you know, the workforce, identifying all of those people that we need to get the work accomplished, you know, and some pretty specific things, you know, electricians, radiological control technicians, you know, things like that are a challenge to come by. And at the same time, you know, Stewart is trying to do the same thing at Savannah River. So finding all of the people that we need and getting them the training and the experience, you know, at the same time that, you know, we're having that retirement cliff that some people talk about. You know, it's a new workforce now. So how do we do more with a less experienced workforce? And that's, you know, that's a challenge. But I think the plans that we have in place for training and collaboration, you know, understanding the challenges collectively and what we need to do will get us to where we need to go.
Sure, let me talk specifically around supply chain. So everybody's talking about, you know, there's been a problem, and, you know, it's really difficult to get electrical components, for instance, right at the moment. But what I would tell you is that for me, for the near term with long lead procurements, I'm actually feeling really positive right now that the kind of fabrication that we need for some of the early buys, both off the back of we're leveraging procurement activities at LAM. So we're having them buy stuff for us to get out early into the market so we don't have the delay of developing our own package of work, you know, to get out with a procurement package. But the other thing is we're working really hard with, like, for instance, glove box manufacturers right now to make sure that we really understand their capability. And quite frankly, it looks like it's bigger than I even expected it to be. Now, that's not to say we don't need to work with Los Alamos and balance priority and how we're going to go after all these glove boxes at an enterprise level. We're going to do that. But I've got three glove boxes that are currently being fabricated for a different project. Same thing, though, very large scale. And a month ago, we trimmed 6 months off of a 28-month schedule on fabrication because they're making such good headway on fabricating those particular glove boxes. And I think we're going to see the same kind of thing. I think the supply chain will respond to our early procurement requests, and we're going to be able to get into fabrication of glove boxes as an example and really see a big sea change in what's coming out of the supply chain. I think they're being very responsive to us. And I think, you know, with both projects and the large scale that we are and the number of components and systems and equipment and tools that we're buying,
as we work together, that just creates a great market for the supply chain. And I think we're going to get a lot of a really good, strong response. That's not to say the next time I go to buy a conduit, that's not going to be a problem. When we get into heavy construction and we're trying to put in, you know, 10 miles of conduit. But for the early going, over the next couple of years, I think we're in pretty good shape with the supply chain and how it's going to respond to us. I've got a lot of, maybe I'm too optimistic, but it feels good at the moment.
So one of the follow-on questions I was going to ask, you know, this is a room of people, organizations that are passionate about nuclear deterrence. This is the folks that are engaged in the business. And if there was an ask of the folks in this room, do you have an ask of the broader enterprise to make HIP production successful? Anybody want to take that one?
So I would say, you know, I think we're doing a lot of that now. Like Marv had talked about the design, you know, NNSA and the design agency and Kansas City and Atlanta worked together to come up with the best solution that reduced our risk to rate production, you know, to get there. That's something that we can actually manufacture and yield at a high rate. So I think that collaboration, just looking at things differently now, we have to support one another and collaborate and share lessons learned to an extent which we didn't do in the past. I mean, you know, we're all in this together. I think we're either successful together or we fail together.
Go ahead and jump in there too. You're looking at me. Yes, I'll jump in. So my ask of the audience would be ready. This is going to be a very large team effort. And you guys, as the administrator said this morning, you know, we're all here because, you know, we feel strongly about this mission. And the ask is going to be big, and it's going to be a lot. And there's plenty of work to go around the industry. I think it's going to take all of us, you know, for a decade to get where we need to get to. Because there's lots of other stuff that are going on in the enterprise at the same time. You know, we're just talking about PITs, and I think, you know, that's going to be a full team effort. We're getting lots and lots of support and assistance from you all. And I think if you just stay ready for when we get to the point of, okay, now it's time. But the time window between when we ask and when we're going to want to receive goods, services, support is going to be much shorter than we have in the past. You know, in the past, we would have done long-range planning, and we would have said, you know, sometime 2 years from now, it's going to be fine. Right, this time it's going to be, we need it in 6 months. Can you get it for us? So I think that turnaround time and the responsiveness is going to be what's needed from the industry to be able to be able to respond and do this big build that we're talking about.
Thank you. I've got one. Okay. So in addition to the partnering that Mark mentioned, which I think is super important, I would ask everyone to every once in a while pick your head up from the focus that you're, you know, you're working and working and working. Pick your head up and say, you know, this could be much more efficient if. Or, you know, if only that were changed. And don't assume that it can't change just because we've always done something some way. I know that I'm open, Jill Ruby's open, Ken Sheely's open. There's an awful lot of people in NSA who are open to good ideas that will make us more efficient, get us where we need to be quicker.
And there are a lot of folks in here that could contribute to that, right? So I think that's a good point to close. I'd like to thank you all for your perspective on PIT production.
And ignition.
Round of applause.